Hey, this is Adam of the Dollar Bin, your local non-news comic book podcast. Recently, I attended the Vertigo on the Edge panel at New York Comic Con 2010. While I was there, I decided, why not see what we can capture on audio? What you're about to listen to is the fruits of my labor. Please stop by www.thedollarbin.net to check out our other stuff, including interviews, discussions, and other stuff. Thanks for listening. Vertigo on the Edge.
Thank you so much for making it through the crowds and finding this room with this, you know, 10-digit room number on it. I don't know why they make these things so complicated, but whatever. I did not create the data center. We've got a great panel here. So many people that you've seen before on Vertigo panels, new faces, you know, some crazy faces in the back, security guys standing in the back here. And we always like to, our Vertigo tradition is always trying to crowd the stage with as many writers and artists as we can, because we know how much they love to see you guys, and hopefully vice versa. Anyway, let me start by introducing, all the way on the left, and his American debut is the artist of Scout, R.M. Guerra. How he goes by. Next to Gare is really the one and only horror master writer, Peter Straub. Next to Peter is a new face to Vertigo, Chrissy Zullo, who many of you might may know of doing the covers for the Cinderella series of Fables. Discovering for the first time, and one of, you know, Vertigo's real strong perennial series, among many other things he's done for us. So you are definitely one of our most prolific writers. Next to Mike is Ryan Kelly, the artist on actually a number of things for us too, in the Mixed Lines, we've done some Darklanders, we've done DMC. He and Ryan Wood are going to be talking about a new series that they're going to be doing for us. Writer-artist Sarah Glidden, who is the writer-artist of her graphic novel memoir called How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less, which will be out in a couple weeks. And another new face to Vertigo is writer Inverta Lopez of the new graphic novel Cuba, My Revolution. Next to Inverta is James Romberger, who's done a number of things for us over the years as well, too. He's going to talk about a new graphic novel called Aaron and Ahmed that he's drawn and written by Jay Cantor. And our surprise guest, who I did not know was going to be here until I saw him outside the room, is Brian Azzarello.
Yes!
Joe the Barbarian and the new Hellblazer miniseries. The American Vampire Guys, writer Scott Snyder. Artist Raphael Albuquerque. always, artist Giuseppe Camicoli. Last but never least is Jason Aaron, writer Scott. And just to arrive, Dean Haskell, artist of Cuba Revolution. Virgo Cohorts, my backup band tonight. Editor Shelley Bond. Editor Will Dennis. Assistant editor Sarah Lynn. All right, we got so much to talk about. We want to also obviously have time for questions from the audience, which is always the best part of these panels for us. And whereas here we have some problems, we're going to try to work this thing. Adam, where are you? Are we okay? Okay. Turn it over. Oh, wait, can I help? Sorry. Okay, okay. Actually, we're going to just start talking because we have. Can we just start it? Okay. All right. Okay. After the first slide is the beautiful cover painted by John Bolton for The Green Woman. Adam is going to hook us up with a back. Sorry about these technical difficulties. We were thrilled to have Peter want to work for us, actually, and to write this great graphic novel, which, you know, is very personal to him in terms of his other novels that he's written. Features a character, Egan Delir, which is a recurring serial killer in some of Peter's novels. Peter, do you want to tell us about The Green Woman and why you wanted to do this particular story as a graphic novel?
Sure. I guess what appealed to me was that it could be a very contained kind of story, which yet allowed for almost an immense number of flashbacks. Also, it just struck me as kind of exciting. It certainly seemed immensely dark. The minute you say something's really dark, my ears perk up, and I think, well, I'll probably like that. I was looking forward to the opportunity of working with my friend Michael Easton, who's an actor on One Life Live. He plays a cop named John McBain. He's very popular.
He is.
And he's also, unlike most truly beautiful people, he's also really nice. He's also really smart. And he also works really hard. So, you know, he and I work together very, very well. Sometimes in bars, sometimes in emails, sometimes in restaurants or in his apartment or my house. And we worked out a long thing which Karen had liked to begin with, and then became increasingly refined. It took a long time. It was a complicated story. We got all the wrinkles out of it. At the point, I think, when it went to John Bolton. And John Bolton was a great artist. And he's I love the work he did, only he's he's not exactly speedy.
I think he
fell ill, didn't he? I think Bolton had some grave physical problems, so we can't blame him for that. But it took years and years and years for this art to get through.
I think it was worth the wait.
Hmm?
I think it was
absolutely worth the wait.
Yeah, but it did take a while.
Every time we saw something from him, we you know, smacked our cheeks and said, "Oh my God, can you believe how good that is?" He treated what we did with immense respect, and in some mysterious sense, elevated it. He knew what we were about. He knew the effects we wanted to communicate, and he nailed all those. And he added something really gorgeous. The gorgeousness of which is intimately associated with violence in it. That's a hard trick. It doesn't look exploitative. It just looks raw and kind of real. Anyhow, we messed along until we came to the end, and then we were done. Karen did a great job editing, and All I can say it was a great experience, and I hope to do it again sometime.
The book is just came out in comic book shops last Wednesday, and will be in bookstores tomorrow. So if you haven't gotten it yet, it's on the floor. I've seen it. It really is. It's a great read. Not an uplifting story, but very psychologically intense and a real great work of art. So thank you, Peter. I see we still don't have our slides, and I apologize about that. American Vampire. This current storyline takes place in Vegas. Mark Doyle, the editor of American Vampire, just told me a great lunch with Scott and Raphael. We were talking about upcoming stuff, and I don't know, guys, tell them what you were talking about at lunch. Was it about the Vegas stuff? Was it, you know, do you want to tell us a little bit about Vegas and a little bit about the next storyline?
Yeah, sure. Thanks again to everybody for picking us up. Right now, we're in the middle of a story that takes place in Las Vegas that in the 1930s. It's about a murder mystery where the prominent citizens around town are showing up dead, drained of blood. This young sheriff, who's just inherited the job from his father who passed away, is trying to kind of come to terms with the way the city is changing around him and becoming something almost vampiric by this kind of death valley that it's up all night. It's changing into this thing that never sleeps and so on. And takes him down into the kind of rabbit hole of the world of American Vampire. We're bringing back the characters from Cycle 1, Pearl and Skinner. If you've been reading it, Pearl's back in issue 7, and Skinner is back in issue 6. And we're trying to sort of give, I guess, hopefully a good sense of the scope of the story we want to tell. And after that, we're going to, you know, do issues 10 and 11. We're having a great artists step in for a little bit while Raphael takes a break, gets a much-needed vacation. It's his studio mate and friend, Matteo Santoluco, who is just terrific. I've seen the pages, and they're just amazing. And then Raphael's going to come back for our next big arc that's going to take place in the 1940s and deal with World War II and Pearl and Henry and Skinner and how they kind of play a part in some of the darker things that go on behind the scenes.
Raphael, you've worked on a bunch of different art styles on American Vampire. You've done a straight line work on Scott's story and on the stories that Stephen King has written in the first collection. You did more of a wash story. Do you prefer one style over the other? Do you find, you know, great qualities in each of them?
Well, the idea when Mark and Will approached me was that, we are looking for someone who can handle with different styles. And I was, I could, but I didn't know what I would do. So the washes thing and the Stephen King part came out like in the last minute, right?
And sometimes the best things too.
Yeah. But, now I'm feeling confident to, try different art styles in the different arcs. But you're looking to do this in a very important way, not just, we don't really want to have only different styles to keep doing it. We want an important reason to put a different art style in the book. So that's what we are working on and we discussed today, right?
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know what's happening with our video stuff here, so I'm just going to have to again. Everyone's doing great. Oh, wait, yeah, great.
We've
got a slide. All right, Mike, go. This is issue 18,
or is
this after the Pick a Story?
That is 18, yeah. That's
18. The Pick a Story that we couldn't call, whatever, Choose Your Own Adventure. Right, this was
right.
For whatever, either reasons. But yeah, tell us about have any of you read this issue, which is the Pick a Story, where you would just like those all Choose Your Own Adventure? Mike was telling me the process of how they worked. It's fascinating, yes. And tell us how you worked with Kornsack, your editor, and Peter Marosh, your co-plotter and artist.
One of the amazing things about The Unwritten, about working on it, is that it's an incredibly collaborative book. Peter and Bonsack and I spend hours every week on the phone just chatting or emailing backwards and forwards. And the idea of doing a Choose Your Own Adventure issue originated with Bonsack, and then I said, well, if we're going to do it, it has to be Lizzie's origin. Yeah, we have this character who may or may not be a fictional character, and if she is, we're not quite sure what book she comes from. So we wanted to tell her story in a way that didn't kind of collapse the waveform. It's like Schrodinger's cat, and she's alive and she's dead inside the box, and she's all these things at once. But we realized very quickly that Choose Your Own Adventures, they depend on the size of the canvas. You have to have a lot of different choices. You have to have the sense that the choices matter. They lead to different outcomes. So we asked for extra pages, and we got them. Bumped it up to a 32-page issue. And then I said to Peter, that's still not going to be enough. Ryan is wincing here because he ended up doing finishes for the entire thing. And it was like each page was two pages.
He's still suffering.
we turned them on their sides. So each page was two pages divided down the middle. But we didn't compromise on the panel count. So each of those mini pages was still four or five panels. How long did it take you to do?
Oh, we had 2 months to work on it, between Peter and I. But Peter was doing like really loose layout sketches. We worked this way, like when we worked on Lucifer for many, many years. And just gives him the pages to me, just says, finish it, and I just finish it. But
it was a lot of work.
I wrote it sequentially. I just wrote it like as one stream of narrative. And whenever there was a branch point, I just write each of the branches, and then the next branch point, I carry on and so on. And it was approved by Bonsack in that form. And then we had the problem of sort of mixing and matching the pages, you know, sort of getting the final sequence right. Oh, God.
It was the hardest comic book I've ever drawn in my life.
Where Bonsack has all the pages spread out on the floor of his apartment, and I've got them all spread on the floor of my living room. We're arguing with each other over the phone. This guy, you know, come down there, ask me a left-hand page, look at them. But it was really worth it. I think, you know, we're very proud of the way it turned out. There are a lot of little cheats and tricks in there, like certain pages are used 2 or 3 times, depending on which of the branches you're following. It means different things. So you'll see Wilson talking to somebody and you're not clear who they are because you only see them from behind. And it's different people according to which way you come into the page.
I always thought that Mike was probably the sanest writer working at Vertigo. After this issue, I realized he really is as crazy as everybody else. Anyway, but thank you, Mike. That was great.
Hey, this is Adam from the Dollar Bin again. Sorry for the interruption. I had to switch formats on my recording, so we missed a little bit. What you're about to hear is Brian Wood introducing the sequel to the New York 4, the New York 5. Enjoy.
It's a Vertigo miniseries now, at the full size. And, I mean, it kind of picks up where we left off. It's sort of less of a story about just one of the characters. It's sort of about all five at once, different from the first book. And, I mean, again, it's just Ryan and I, you know, working together, which is, like, just really great. I mean, he's very, I mean, I think he and I work very, very well.
I think what's great about this book, too, is that you don't have to wear the New York 4 to pick this up and read it.
But you should. It's still out there. You can buy it in stores. Yeah. There's a store in the shop can order it.
But we aren't doing this as a regular. We're doing this as a traditional comic book size. And Shelley's dream, when this all is done, is to blow up the first the Minx book to this size. It might be your dream too, but I hear from Shelley more often. Or even larger. Yes, Shelley wants it huge into one big collection. But anyway, here's some of Ryan's art, which is really quite beautiful. It's 4 issues in black and white. 32 pages of story, and we'll be $2.99. Like, have all you guys been happy to hear that all the prizes on the Radio Comics are staying at $2.99? We're learning about what's going on. $2.99. ourselves further. And yeah, so, but, and this were, again, you're getting a lot of story for your money as well, too. So that will be in January of this year. So make sure you see it. Our next slide is a double. DMZ and, that's a cool, I don't think I've seen that cover yet. Lord Landers. I mean, Brian, DMZ has turned into, you know, again, you know, I was saying before, like Lucifer and Robbie Bowles, like so many White Last Man, so many series that have helped form the basis of Vertigo and has turned into such a long running series, a successful line of trade paybacks for us. I know that you've announced that you'll be ending the series soon, at the end of 2011, correct?
72, issue 72. I don't know what date that is.
Right.
Exactly,
okay.
But about a bit over a year.
Without giving away, really, the end, because then, you know, why would anybody want to read it then? They still want to read it. Could you just give a hint of, you know, something that you might want to tease somewhere?
Oh man, I don't know. It's sort of a...
It was quite an accomplishment, you know, for the what, 6 years, 7 years?
It's going to be 6 years of books, and then you count that first year where I pitched and, you know, sort of planned it out. So, yeah, I mean, 7 years of my life. It's sort of the kind of thing where I'm going to be very happy to be done, because I'm kind of ready to, you know, try a different book. But also, I mean, I've kind of lived with this book every day for, you know, it's going to be seven years, and I kind of really don't know what that's going to be like. But I don't have to worry about it anymore.
You'll find something else. You'll find something else to worry about, I'm sure.
I'm sure I will, yeah. As far as the end goes, I mean, I honestly don't know what to say. Without, I don't want to, like, mess it up.
Another one of my stupid
like
questions.
You know? Right. And I know a lot of people read the book in trades and stuff, so I don't want to ruin
anything.
Sure,
we won't be disappointed. Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. And Northlanders, of course, this is a two-parter with art by Becky Coonan. You know, I love this cover. The Starlin's called The Girl on the Ice. And it's great. I mean, Brian and Becky go way more working together. And how many of you are reading Northlanders?
This is the story that I came up with after reading every Hanny Menkel novel out there. So it sort of has that Scandinavian crime novel vibe.
Right, this is right, yeah. Steve Larson bit. Okay, thank you. Next slide. Okay, this is, I love these. this is, Hellblazer, again, is actually our longest running monthly title at Vertigo, and he's one of the guys, John Constantine, who started it all. You might have heard that John Constantine is actually, after all these years of being a bachelor, is getting married. Maybe, as you can tell by that cover. That's the cover by Simon Bisley, issue 275. Giuseppe, is this issue drawn? Have you done drawing this issue? Right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, gotta go.
Yeah. Okay. Can you believe that Constantine is actually in this situation?
If I got into the same situation, yeah, I can't believe that John Constantine can do it. Sorry about my voice, but I just came back from John Constantine's bachelor party last night. It's a little bit rough. And yeah, no, it's totally unexpected, but somehow makes sense, you know. It's just not in his prime, you know. And but somehow it's still in his prime. He's always in his prime. But yeah, like if you ever got married or if you ever got invited to weddings, you know that there's going to be some stuff to do, you know. Like finding the rings, you know, finding the place, getting married, you know. And, you know, stuff like this, you know, with John Constantine, I don't know. Can't be, you know, twisted. I don't know. You'll find out.
And that's a splash from splash page. From
oh yeah, that's from issue 273, I think. Larry's he's just falling, but I think it's his reaction to Epiphany is like his answer. Yeah, it was a little bit shocked, so.
Yeah.
And yeah, his arm is still missing, and you know, yeah.
And Hellblazer 275 is an oversized issue, 48 pages, so it would be an oversized price, and keeping with that, but still within reason, and that will be coming out in January as well, so thank you.
Thank you.
The City of Demons is a mini-series. It's almost kind of like a, we don't do, you know, other world stories at Vertigo, but we always wish that sometimes we had more of an opportunity to do them, and this was a great chance for us with Hellblazer, with writer Cy Spencer and Sean Murphy, to do this really gut-wrenching story about Constantine, kind of another life of Constantine. And I don't know how much we want to give away from the beginning, but... Sean, you want to give him maybe tell him what the opening scene is, and then you can, yeah, that's Sean Murphy.
Sure, you want to do that?
Yeah.
Remember, I'm the boss, so
okay.
Don't fall off the stage. The opening scene of the first issue is Constantine's walking down the street, and
such a long time since I drew it.
He's run over by a bus.
That's right. He's run over by a bus.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody interested now? Can I mention the outer body experience part, or did I just say it? Alright, forget that. Yeah, there's a lot of some hospital scenes and stuff like that. For no reason.
Violence. Incredible horror. A frenetic pace and awesome artwork.
Maybe you should be the artist.
don't tempt Jordan, please. Anyway, but it's a really riveting story. It's coming out in this month, actually. Thank you. And what's also cool about this series is something we normally don't do at Vertigo either. Is we're releasing it's a 5-issue miniseries. We're releasing 2 issues per month too. To make a bit of an event around the series and how special we think it is. I mean, City of Demons, Hellblazer 275 is, you know, all about really celebrating what is the 25th anniversary of John Constantine.
It's a good jumping on point. When I came to this book, I didn't know anything about the character. So I imagine everybody here already knows a lot about it, but if you're looking to just wade your way into Constantine's story, I mean, Halloween's coming up. No, why not spring for 2 in 1 month? So, I recommend it. It's a good jumping on.
So, yeah, that's a good point too, because a lot of people are put off by long-running series, and at Vertigo we don't do too many miniseries from our existing characters. So, this is a great opportunity to read another story about John. Thanks, Sean. We talked about this already. Okay, that's the cover to this is the Binding Clyde issue, sort of. Okay, next. Cuba, My Revolution. This is an incredible, incredible memoir that just came out a month ago, and I sort of met Inverna through another walk of my life, and didn't realize that, you know, I knew that she was an accomplished artist and painter, and through Dean Haspel, who I've known for years, and been happy to work with him on the Twitter, and on The Alcoholic. Dean and Inverna also have a long history together, and Dean, from knowing Inverna for many years, sort of convinced her to tell her personal story, which is quite quite incredible. As a 17-year-old medical student living in Havana during the time of Castro's revolution, Inverna had dreams of becoming a fine artist, but she was so swept up in Castro's idealism and his ideology in the revolution that she abandoned her art career. She joined the revolution. She became a medic in the Bay of Pigs, and she went through some horrifying experiences. Unfortunately, this story is based on her life, a lot of the stuff is true. And Verna went through some incredible, devastating times, and she recovered, she came out of her experiences of being imprisoned and being tortured, and going back to her art, and then realizing that Castro was not who we thought he was. And Verna, tell us about everything that happened in this book. What scene was maybe meant the most to you, or maybe was the hardest to talk about and to write about?
Probably the last scene. This is part of my life from when I was 17 until 23. There are 7 years, and there are quite important times during the revolution. The beginning, Bay of Pigs, the missile crisis, and the death of Kennedy. The collaboration with Dean was very inspirational, was hard. I had never done a collaboration before. And I'm a painter, I take my own decisions. So between Dean and the colorist and the wonderful editor, I think we really accomplished something very close to life. Maybe Dean can tell you a little bit about how we went about.
Did anybody see my Facebook page? I talk way too much about myself, so I'm going to let Vernon answer that. For about 20 to 25 years, I've known Vernon. She's been in my life. She's been very close to me. She's been like a second mother. And little by small, she would tease me, maybe that's the wrong term, but tell me dribs and drabs of her story about having escaped or left Cuba, having come and reestablished herself in America, in New York City, something I'll never know what that's like because I'm a native New Yorker. I'm from here. I don't know what that privilege is like. And she would tell these stories, and as I grew as a storyteller myself in collaborations on The Alcoholic, The Quitter, other writers, you know, writing my own stories for the last 20 years, I started to knit together in the back of my head in Verna's story, and I asked her if she would please tell her story and put this down on paper, and would she trust me in illustrating and collaborating with her. And I think I was in the middle of doing The Alcoholic when she decided to do this, and that's when I brought the story to Karen, and then things started moving from there. But it was a really... it was a tough process. I was drawing someone's real life story that was really close to me. Usually, I'm not doing that. I'm usually drawing other people's stories or a good friend's story, like Jonathan Ames. But this one, I had to be truly accountable to.
And you couldn't boss her around.
And I couldn't boss her around.
She bossed you around, so. So anyway, if you haven't picked up Cuba yet, please do. It is. And Verna's an amazing person, and what she's gone through in her life, what she's achieved in her life, is truly inspiring. And we've gotten such great reviews on this book. It's being compared to Persepolis, and you know, in a similar vein. And it's again, it's a book that I think we'll be hearing a lot more about as time goes on. So it came out a few weeks ago, and please, it really is a wonderful, wonderful read. Sarah Glidden's memoir, How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less. It sounds like it's a travel book, and actually the bookstore, our bookstore buyers actually wanted to stock it in the travel section, and the guys at work said, no, this is not that kind of travel book. Tell us what kind of book it is, Sarah.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but Israel's kind of a complicated country. some stuff going on, and being raised a kind of left-wing New England political junkie, I thought I knew everything that I needed to know about it, and would often get into arguments with people, such as my mother, about, oh, well, you know, they just need to do this, and then the whole crisis over there will be solved, and this is what Israel needs to do, and this is what the Palestinian people need to do. And one day we were arguing on the phone, and she just said, well, you know, maybe you should go over there and see it for yourself before you, you know, keep these strong opinions about it. Well, maybe I should. And there's a program called Birthright Israel. It's a foundation set up to send anyone who's Jewish.
If you have one quarter Jewish.
Even there were people who, their grandmother was Jewish, but they were raised Christian. But if you're curious, and you're between 18 and 27, they'll send you on an all-expenses-paid 10-day tour of Israel. And I had always avoided this because certain it was going to be, you know, propaganda. It's nothing is, you know, there's no free lunch. So I said, well, I'll go and I'll make a book about it. And if it is propaganda, I can write about how, you know, this tour is trying to manipulate people. And if it's not, then it'll probably be interesting anyway. So I went, and it really wasn't what I expected it to be. And I learned a lot. And it was very emotionally difficult because just taking everything that you thought you knew and having that completely smashed to pieces is really, really hard. So that's what this book is about. And it's not 60 days.
It's 200 pages, actually. It's quite insightful. It's extremely accessible. For someone like myself who is Jewish and thinks I know what's going on in Israel, I really didn't. You know, I was educated a lot by this book. But what Sarah really does is sort of lays out both sides of the conflict. She looks at the Palestinian side, she looks at the Israeli side, and it's interesting how she does it, and I kind of won't tell them sort of what resolutions you come to at the end. But there's historical stuff in there that gives history to the regions and obviously political stuff. But also, you meet real people from both sides of the situation there. And so it's quite an achievement. And I don't think you've read anything like it before, especially in comic. So please buy this. It is out first of November. Thank you, Sarah. This is a graphic novel by the novelist Jay Cantor, who some of you may know from some of his work. He's also a comic book fan. He wrote Crazy Cat, which came out, it was 15 years ago, something like that. And Great Neck, and a couple of other well-known novels. And we were lucky to get James Brown-Burka to illustrate this book, which I guess quickly, James, do you want to give us the starting point of who Aaron is and who Ahmed is?
I was lucky to get this brilliant script, which Aaron is a doctor at Guantanamo and Ahmed is an inmate, and it kind of goes through shows what you don't see on the news at the inside of Guantanamo and the kind of brutal methodology that's going on in there, and then goes through to Pakistan, to jihadi camps, and then eventually back to New York. So, it's really showing, trying to explore the roots of terrorism and how somebody becomes a suicide bomber. And it gave me a lot of opportunities to kind of widescreen. I mean, sort of an epic adventure on one level, but certainly gave me a widescreen approach to doing something
very it's a very, very intense read, and really a terrific, terrific great story. Very proud to be publishing this book as well. That book will be out next spring. Thank you. These are three Vertigo crime books. One of them is out now, or is just about to come out, Denise Lane's book, The Cities of the Family. We're thrilled to have Andy Diggle, of Ratcatcher, up here. Andy, what was it like writing a fast-paced, I guess, cat and mouse, rat and mouse? There's a mic, it's a floating mic.
It was exciting to be a part of. I kind of like mainstream crime stories, and it's not very often in comics you get an opportunity to do a 180-page straight, flat-out crime thriller. I was very lucky to be matched up with Victor Ibanez, whose artwork I didn't know at the time, but it was our editor Kornsack who suggested it, and he's absolutely fantastic. He's a real find. I think like halfway through drawing the book, he started, you know, various other editors from different companies and imprints started trying to headhunt him. But he stuck around and just has done really amazing artwork. It's just exactly the kind of story I like to tell, and there's not really anywhere else in comics I get to do that.
We're thrilled to have Andy back at Vertigo after The Losers, and we hope to see more of you again.
I'll be back.
You're going to be back. First time in America, and when Vertigo first started, it was a bunch of British and Scottish and I guess one Irish writer and a bunch. And people would accuse me of only working with British people. Literally, real American writers would say, "Well, you won't buy my pitch because I'm not British." And I'm like, it really has nothing to do with it. But anyway,
I'm Serbian.
You're Serbian, exactly. And as you can tell, the Vertigo crew has. Really has an international flavor to it these days, and and Garrett is Serbian, but you live in
Spain.
Yeah. What attracted you to a book about this Native American?
Well, I think that the word is it's luck, but the luck has a name, and basically name is Vertigo and its atmosphere, and more precise, Will Dennett. He just sensed that he should join Jason's script and myself, and it came about so easily that it's still unbelievable to us. It's so easy to create, feeling protected by you guys. So it's just, I don't know if this sounds like some ordinary stuff, but it's, I feel it deeply, you know, so I'm really thankful.
Feel-good story about abortion and unwanted pregnancies. But I say that jokingly. It's a story that's really about family, which I think most of Scout, through the ups and downs, is a book about family and where you grew up and the setting and everything. After that arc, there's a couple of standalones. This is one of them that focuses on Agent Nitz, which, as you can see, finds him at a good point in his life. And after that, we launch into the next big arc. As we move towards Scalp number 50, which is pretty amazing just when I think about that we've been able to make it 50 issues for a book that was, I'm a guy from Alabama by way of Kansas City, Gara's Serbian who lives in Spain, and we just met 2 days ago for the first time here in New York City so that we can talk about our book that we do that's set in South Dakota. somehow that all manages to work.
Jeff showed up. It's hard to find this room, I almost didn't find it either. So Jeff, let me everybody to get a chance to introduce him before.
They all die, and it's the last issue. I've just decided.
at number 14 just came out, and it's kind of halfway through our third arc now, and everything's kind of building towards a climax. All the different stories I've set into motion since issue one, where there's going to be a big war between the militia, the cultists, with Gus and the kids kind of caught in the middle of that. And after that, it's going to be sort of a new status quo for the book moving forward, and I think that's sort of the plot stuff going on, but aside from that, what's been happening is really Gus is changing, and he's no longer the doe-eyed innocent he was. In our first arc, he's sort of crossed lines that maybe you would expect to see Jedward do, and his character is maturing and hardening in ways that he's stepping up and becoming like a father figure for the other young kids. So that's kind of where the book's heading.
It's a great evolution. And the second volume, the second collection will be out on...
I think first week of December.
Yeah, very soon. How many have written Sweet Tooth? How many of you? Few of these special oversized books called Vertigo Resurrected, 100-page issues which collect or, in some cases, first publish some books that never saw print. The first one is called Shoot. That's the one with the gun on it. It's the infamous Warren Ellis, Phil Jimenez Hellblazer story that was written and drawn about whenever Columbine happened. And the story, unfortunately, was very close to the events that happened at Columbine, and we felt it wasn't the right time to publish the book. It's an incredible story about violence and guns and children and parents, and it's as strong a story and as effective a story as it was when Warren wrote it many years ago. We're really happy to have the opportunity to publish it now, and in the rest of this book we're going to have a whole bunch of different short stories that have appeared in some of the great anthologies that Vertigo has done over the years, stories from Gangland and Heartthrobs and Strange Adventures and by many people on this table, behind this table. A few of them actually, a lot of them have Warren around them, Brian, but Azarillo's got a few in there. And you do, actually. You did. Nobody told me, so. Actually, you're one of, I think James is one of the story in there, Robert. I think. Unless maybe, yeah. Exactly. But people like Grant Morrison and Garth Ennis and Frank Quitely and a whole bunch of guys. So that will be out this October. And The Extremist, how many of you read it? Now I'll know who the real, true, diehard Vertigo people are. The people who have been around since, all right, since the line started 7 years ago. The Extremist was a great miniseries that Peter Moglia and Tim Kieffer did. It seems tame by today's standards, but at the time it was quite the talk of the office. And it's essentially about people who, when they wear this extremist costume, they can do very extreme things in every walk of life. And it really, again, tests people's sense of self and people's sense of responsibility. It's Milligan at his best, and we're all huge Peter Milligan fans up here and out there. And this really is an incredible story. We're so happy to be finally publishing it. And that will be out also as a Vertigo Resurrected book at the end of this year. Books, iZombie, that's a House of Mystery annual cover, cover. These are both out in October. Our next slide. This is a beautiful, beautiful cover by Chrissy. Yeah, this is the cover for Shelley. Whispering in my ear.
Sorry, I wanted to actually just quickly say, this is a piece of artwork that Chrissy Zullo painted as an audition piece, which actually got her the job of the cover painter for the first Cinderella miniseries. And so we're up here now because we wanted to officially announce the second Cinderella miniseries, Fables Are Forever. And Chrissy's going to be staying with us to paint the new covers. Team as before. We have Chris Robertson, who's the writer, Sean McManus is the artist, and it's launching in February.
Chrissy, how did you first get to work at Vertigo? What did you meet Shelley at a convention, or I don't even remember?
I actually met her DC. I think they're doing it here too. They do the talent search at the conventions, and I went to the one in San Diego, and I was one of the 10 people picked from Sunday or something, and got to meet with Shelley, so it all kind of went from there. So.
And that stuff actually works. We actually do use people who discover these shows, so yeah. Which is a great thing. Yeah. And your work is beautiful. We're so happy to have you working with us. Next slide, please. Fables 100. Heard about this for months, for a year. It's a big 100th issue, which is coming out at the end of this year. 60-page lead story by Bill and Mark Buckingham and Steve Villalala and a couple of other inkers. Some short stories by Bill and some other people, a Burning Questions piece, and Dane Board, paper dolls, anything Shelley could get us to throw in there that she could have fun with. And it's, you know, what can I say? Fables is one of our star books of the line. And the series, you know, continues to get even better than it is. And we're thrilled with Bill, we're thrilled with everyone on the book, and we thank everyone for supporting such a terrific book for Vertigo. Excellent. Delirium's Party for... Beautiful art and story with this follow-up to the Little Emma storybook that I think, you know, God help me, was like 10 years ago. So anyway, this is similar format, art's gorgeous. We're re-releasing the Little Emma storybook, and that will be out in early next year, March. She'll make an endless cry, Shelley tells me. Okay. All right, we have a few books we're going to announce quickly, and then we're going to quickly go to a few questions. Some of you who are foodies out there, or who are No Reservation fans, or Anthony Bourdain fans, might have read in his blog a couple weeks ago that he's going to be writing a graphic novel for us called Get Jiro. Bourdain is a huge comic book fan from way back. He used to spend summers in France. He has family. He's part French, I shouldn't tell, but he's from New Jersey. And so he's got this love of French comics, love of American comics. He and writer Joel Rose, who I've known for a long time, many people remember the big books that Paradox Press published many years ago, as well as La Pacifica, which is a Paradox mystery book. He and Joel are writing this really incredible sort of send-up of food culture, obsessiveness with society and being rich and thin and getting the best reservation in the most expensive restaurant and actually killing for it. And it takes place in a society that's really a caricature of what we live in now. Essentially, LA is run by these gang leaders who are chefs. And they're all after... There's one new chef in town, Jiro, and that's him. And this is what Jiro does. Anyway, that's going to be out spring 2012. The script is fantastic. Landon Foss, really wonderful artist, is drawing away. It's a big book, and you'll be hearing a lot about it. We want to announce that. And our next slide is Azarella Miso. Brian actually surprised us. And it's kind of, we ripped us up really fast. That's actually was the technical difficulties. I was like, well, Brian is here. We gotta put something up there. So anyway, this says Azarillo Riso. And Brian, do you want to tell us what
we're putting the band back together.
Next year, and very different than 100 Bullets, but it's going to be totally awesome, man. And that's it, right? Alright, and he doesn't have to talk. And I think this might be our last slide coming up. Annotated Sandman. This is not the cover, because this is the cover to The Absolute, but we whipped this up together. Quickly, The Annotated Sandman is actually this huge, mega, four-volume hardcover book annotating every page of Sandman through all the issues. It's written by Les Klinger, who is an old hand of this. He's has done similar books, the Annotated Dracula, the Annotated Sherlock Holmes, that Norton has published. Has any of you seen those books? They're wonderful, yeah. Details. They're really interesting stuff. He writes like a dream. He's obsessive in terms of detail, and he's put so much of his heart into this. And he's going to be big, oversized books that are going to echo each of the Absolutes. And we're still trying to pin down the actual publishing schedule. It'll take a long time to produce, but he's going to be really, I mean, this is the same campaign that we did many years ago was great. This is, again, page by page, and it's really quite impressive, and Neil is spending a lot of time working with us, too. So we have time just for, like, two questions, so make them good, make them short. Don't ask one for everyone on the panel to ask, or else they're going to freak. Yes, you. Are there any plans? Yes. There are no definite plans, but we love those guys. And Josh is a great writer, and as well as Alberto Ponticello, wonderful artist, and we'd love to work with him both of them. So yes, we will. So, yes.
So Stardew January will all be 20 pages.
Starting in January, all 32-page comics will be 20 pages of story and art. It'll be going down from 22 pages. That's sort of how we're able to keep the price at $2.99. When there's so many other books by other publishers at $3.99 for 22 pages, we really felt that we needed to do something to keep books at a price that you guys could afford, that we could afford to publish as well, too. So, but starting with January. Yes, thank you. Yes, right here.
Yeah, I had a question for Jason Aaron. Your book is incredible, and it's written about such a specific group of people, and I'm wondering how you were able to research that and make it seem genuine and not like you're just putting facts off of Wikipedia.
The short answer is you read a lot and you make some stuff up and you talk to people who know.
Any chance of seeing another round of Vertigo Visions? I mean, DC has got this whole dark, fucked-up fantasy side to it that they can't tell stories about,
right.
And I'd like to see Vertigo touch on that again.
All right, we don't have any plans for doing this. I mean, we have kind of moved all the few DC characters that we have played with over the years. We've sort of moved them back over to DCU. Maybe sometime in the future, but really at this time we're really keeping Vertigo. Really at its heart, Vertigo has become a creator-owned line. When we first started the line 17 years ago, my vision for it was eventually to be a place where all these great people could create wonderful stories and wonderful characters and have a stake in the material. that they create. And, you know, I think our dream came true. We have this terrific line with so many terrific people, new people to the line, new types of stories. And we thank you all for coming here, for supporting us.
Again, this was a Dollar Bin bootleg of Vertigo on the Edge panel at New York Comic Con 2010. Please stop by the site, www.thedollarbin.net, for lots of other fun goodies.